Steve Friend grew up in Savannah, Georgia. He followed his father's footsteps and attended the University of Notre Dame, where he graduated with a bachelor's in accounting. He worked in accounting for 2 years before deciding he wanted to be in law enforcement. He was a sworn police officer in Savannah and Pooler, Georgia for 4 years, and then he joined the FBI in 2014. He spent his first 7 years in the FBI investigating violent crime and major offenses occurring on Indian reservations in northeast Nebraska. This included the Omaha Nation, Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska, and the Santee Sioux Tribe. He was also a member of the FBI Omaha SWAT team for 5 years. He transferred to Daytona Beach in 2021 and began investigating child exploitation, human trafficking, and child sexual abuse. He was reassigned to the Joint Terrorism Task Force in October 21. This is where his story really begins. Welcome to the program, Steve Friend.
Thank you very much, Glenn. It's an honor.
So, Steve, tell me what happened after you were reassigned to the Joint Terrorism Task Force.
Well, when they brought me over, they had to put me on the cases that they had already in existence. And what I soon learned was that the vast majority of those cases were tied to the January 6th incident at the Capitol. Just in my habit as an investigator coming from violent crime and in an environment where there's lots of cases coming very rapidly, I just started to look through the cases and really wanted to take action on them. And what I came to learn, though, was that they'd done everything that they'd been expected to do and were waiting to hear back from Washington as to further action or what the status of the case was going to be, which to me was a major departure from the FBI rules for investigative work.
So wait a minute. The work had already been done by Washington. Why were you assigned it then?
That was my question. Just being very, very familiar with the case management practices within the FBI, having opened over 200 cases in my career, when you open a case, it's assigned to you, it's assigned to your office. So when we had these January 6th cases, it seemed to me that those cases should have been opened from Washington, D.C. But if a decision was made to send them out to the field, then the case was going to sit with the office that it was with. In my case, it was Daytona, which is in the Jacksonville field office. And we'd run that case the way we wanted to, the way we wanted to make our decisions for further proper investigative steps. However, it was clear that a lot of the pre-work had been done on those cases from Washington, and they were giving directives to our offices, even though we were on paper, the assigned case agents with our office of origin. Washington was really running the show, and which is not a kosher move on our part in the FBI.
Why would they do that?
I asked, and I was told that had been raised early on, and the response from headquarters had been that it was to get quote-unquote buy-in from the field. There's a couple of things I can surmise from that. One is the FBI suits and headquarters just have a really negative opinion of its investigators, and they thought, if your name's not on it, they're not going to do a good job, which to me just kind of rang hollow, pretty macabre view of your personnel. So then I just did a little bit of critical thinking on it. And, first of all, the January 6th incident logically is one incident. It should be one case. But instead, the FBI is elected to open a separate case for every single subject. So right then and there, you have one case has been made into 800, 900, 1,000 cases. So now you've upped the total bottom line number of domestic terrorism investigations. And then by spreading those cases to the field, you're essentially backfilling a narrative that was pushed out in 2021, 2022 about this rise in violent domestic terrorism around the country, when in reality, all those cases are stemming from one incident on January 6, 2021, in one location.
Okay, so you were suspended because you wouldn't do it. You were suspended without pay. Your gun, your badge, everything was taken from you. And it's because you wouldn't, what they say is refusing a lawful arrest warrant, which demonstrated poor judgment and improperly accessing the FBI's employee handbook and refusing to attend the SAB. Tell me about this.
Yeah, so I my first opportunity really to take to engage in an arrest of a January 6th subject, I'd already decided that should that come to pass, that I was going to make my disclosure to my supervisor. So in the lead up to that, I the week before, spoke to my immediate supervisor, raised my concerns about improper case management practices, and then also just my concerns about how we were going to be arresting these subjects, because in my experience, and having arrested 150 plus violent criminals, you never had to use a tactical team, a SWAT team, to bring them into custody, because I'd talked to those individuals, and we'd done similar things with these January 6th subjects. So to me, it seemed like an unnecessary use of force. And I have SWAT experience to back that up. So I brought all those concerns to them. They passed it up the chain of command, my supervisor, to the second level. Again, had more sit-down meetings with those guys, voiced the same concerns, even brought up FBI training about abuse of power that all agents have to go through in the academy, where you go to the Holocaust Memorial and the MLK Memorial, and you discuss, you know, how those civil rights abuses and atrocities can occur.
Right.
So raised all those concerns, and they said it was very clear to me that they were trying to divorce the two issues of me raising my concern, and then they said it's separate for me to refuse to participate. And I contradicted that. I said, you know, my job is to defend the Constitution. I took an oath to uphold and defend it. And I think that we are violating due process, and we're potentially violating some cruel and unusual punishment, but just how we're bringing these guys into custody, even, you know, interviewing people who we never actually intend to prosecute is an abuse. So I have to default to my oath of office, and I think I am doing my job. They didn't agree with me. They said that I had a questionable judgment and was not executing a lawful warrant. That was one of the issues. When I got concerned about my future with the FBI, because they multiple times told me, you know, where do you see yourself with us in the future? In fact, my special agent in charge, Sherry Onks, told me I needed to do some soul searching and decide if I wanted to be an FBI agent. So I got an attorney, and he asked me to get him the employee handbook and disciplinary procedures, because he just wanted to be equipped to mount the fence for me.
So that was the improperly accessing the employee handbook, giving it to your attorney?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
My employee's request. I even, when I was eventually suspended, they, you know, said, "What did you take?" And I said, "Oh, that was the employee handbook." And they're like, they said, "We need that back." I said, I thought you guys could get the handbook, but I'm happy to send it back to you.
Okay, hang on just a second. When we come back, he's going to talk about the tools called Guardians and his concern on how those tools are being used right now to investigate U.S. citizens. Tools called Guardians. Oh, that sounds safe. More with Steve Friend next. We are talking to a very brave FBI agent. I wish there were more of them. Where are you, local FBI agents? Steve Friend is his name. He's an FBI whistleblower. He objected to being part of the January 6th raids for several reasons. First of all, before I get to some other things, can you tell me, you said earlier that you thought it was cruel and inhumane treatment, I think you said, the way some of these prisoners are being handled. Can you tell me anything you know about that?
Well, I can only speak to, you know, what I've read about how folks are being held in the D.C. jails who have actually been taken into custody. My genuine concern was the process being a punishment for people who actually we never intended or were going to not be able to charge. So, you know, just sitting down somebody in front of them, you know, stresses them out. A lot of these guys had to hire attorneys. The one individual I participated in with an interview, he had lost his job and was, you know, retaining an attorney. And it was for, you know, walking in the Capitol after having gained permission of the police. So what was the point of us going through that process?
You know, it's amazing to me. You said at one point, you said that the process is the punishment. And when you think of that, that is terrifying, because that means that even if they can't charge you or you're not really guilty of anything, they're going to make this so horrible on you that you just stay away from everything. You teach people a lesson. Stay away. Don't even get close to any of this.
That's exactly right. I mean, even you can go back to what happened to Michael Flynn. I mean, he, you know, he was forced to sell his house and essentially become bankrupt in order to mount a defense, and ultimately pled guilty to avoid his son being roped into it. So that's the process, is the punishment.
And the FBI designated the grassy area outside the U.S. Capitol as a restricted zone after January 6th. And did they apply that retroactively to be able to look and say, well, you were in that restricted zone on January 6th?
That's my understanding, that they wanted to really send a message and then gather more people up in this dragnet. So they decided that the lawn on the outside of the Capitol, outside of those four walls, was going to be deemed restricted, because at some point there had been some barricades. But just anecdotally, I heard individuals who were there on the 5th, they said they saw barricades, but on the 6th, the morning of, they saw people removing them. So there's a little bit of suspect action being involved with that.
Tell me about Guardians, the tools that they use to investigate, called Guardians.
So Guardian is a software system. I like to think of it as like the 911 system in the FBI. You call 911, just cat in the tree for your neighborhood. You can do that to the FBI, to the National Intake Center. Those folks there deal with probably 3,000 calls a day or electronic communications. They kind of pull through it and disseminate them to the field for a proper investigative action. So when it came to January 6th, there was a huge uptick in the amount of guardians that came in to the FBI, and it was from all over the country. It could be from a disgruntled neighbor who didn't like his buddy across the street having a MAGA flag. It could be family member ratting on a family member. You know, my uncle was there. He told me he was there. So people that were trying to be helpful to the FBI in pursuing this investigation, a lot of them actually just went to the FBI website and looked at pictures, and then would call in a tip saying, you know, this unknown subject looks like somebody I went to high school with. And those tips would come in. They would be pushed out to, you know, wherever was deemed the appropriate geographical location. So for me, you know, I got one. That was really the first interaction I had. It was an anonymous tip from Rhode Island that said this individual was involved in assaulting police officers at the January 6th riot. They had done a workup on this guy. His phone had the geofence on his phone, the GPS, did not ping at the Capitol. The facial recognition with his social media accounts did not come up with a positive match, but I was still asked to go and attempt to do an interview. So it's not illegal for me to knock on anybody's door and say, hey, I'm the FBI. Do you want to talk to me?
Right.
It's called a knock and talk. But you know, it was just kind of a concern, just because even if he admitted to being at the Capitol, there was no complainant. It was going to be very difficult to even charge the case. So I still, just good team player at that point, said, all right, I'll go knock on his door. Went to the, drove about an hour and a half, knocked on the door, met a gentleman there. That I am with the FBI. We're looking at January 6th. Were you at the Capitol that day? And he looked at me and said, no, that was the day of my son's funeral. So I just, you know, well, I guess I made him relive that whole experience and gave him my business card and was on my merry way. So that was my first guardian that I had pertaining to January 6th. Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing an escalation of political targeting at the FBI? How concerned about all the things that we're seeing with the FACE Act, now the FBI coming in the middle of the night and arresting 78-year-old people, the idea that if you disagree at the school board, you're somehow or another a terrorist?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a political element. I think there's two dueling things. There's politics and there's ambition. Sometimes there's one, sometimes it's the other, sometimes there's both, I think. And there are some true believers. Definitely my special agent in charge, Sherry Onks, is of the political left, made no secret about that. She sent out emails about the Dobbs decision being the Supreme Court taking away women's rights, and she put a gay pride flag display up in our office in Jacksonville. But then you have my assistant special agent in charge, Colt Murkowski, who I believe is probably more ambitious, kind of saw this as being a huge case of the FBI, the bigger than 9/11, and you know, if you get your name on something with January 6th and you can claim you had supervising responsibilities in some way of the largest and most important case that the agency's ever worked, that's going to be a pretty good ticket for you to promote within the organization. And I think just recently, you know, with these FACE Acts, you know, I've had a little bit of experience with it, just being on human trafficking investigations. I reached out to some of the crisis pregnancy centers after the Jackson Dobbs case, just because I was worried that they might have some threats come in. And then I also figured that they might actually see some human trafficking victims, so they could be a good resource right. for me. Did that, got a little helmet sticker from the bosses, but then was also told that I really needed to prioritize looking into abortion clinics because they were really going to be the ones that were at risk.
Really?
And I responded, I think the only time that the team that wins does that is like when the Lakers win the title, they burn the city. But otherwise, I don't think that the pro-life side is going
right.
to burn down places that are going to be shut down.
Right.
That's just my critical thinking.
And last question, and I know I asked you this before, but why aren't we seeing more FBI agents coming out? We've always thought that these guys were the best of the best. You know, conservatives have always given them a pass, which I don't think we should have. But now they're showing themselves to be, I think, less than honorable if they're seeing things themselves and are not standing up against it.
I'm disheartened by this myself. I told you the other night, I really thought that I was going to have the Captain America endgame moment where, I fought a battle, and even in my most dire situation, I would get that on your left moment, and there would be my brother and sister in arms standing there, and they just aren't. I'm done talking about the good men and women at the FBI. Yeah, I know that's the politically correct thing that all of our leaders like to say to make sure the donations keep coming in, but I'm no longer doing that. I think that it's a really sweet gig to be an FBI agent. I lived it for 8 years. It's a great job. You're the most interesting person, maybe with the exception of radio show host, that you walk in any room. Everybody wants to ask you questions and the big case, you can really get by in a 20-year career being grossly overpaid and underworked. And folks just kind of play that same narrative where they say, oh, I'm just trying to pay the bills and put food on the table, and I'm going to keep my head down. I only got a few years to retirement. I swore an oath, and I I voiced to my bosses, I guess you guys found the one that actually took their oath seriously. I believed in it, and that's why I wanted to do the job. So this was a job, so I did the job, and it never occurred to me that was not that was an option to not do that. Unfortunately, I guess the other 14,000 agents who wear the gun and badge don't share my sentiments.
Well, we have all kinds of oversight. If the Republicans gain the House, it looks like they're going to at this point. And I know you're in touch with people on Capitol Hill, and I hope we see more of you. And I hope all of this comes to light and we do clean up this organization, or shut it down. If it won't be cleaned up, then shut it down. Steve, thank you so much.
Thank you, Glenn.
You bet. Steve Friend, former FBI agent, he has had quite a transformation. You'll see him tomorrow as he talks about some of the cases that we have in front of you tomorrow. It is a really very important show because we don't know our Constitution. Mike Lee's son came with his wife and Mike, and we went out to dinner afterwards, and his son is actually, I think he's clerking for the Supreme Court now. And he said, when I heard my dad was coming to this, I wanted to come. He said, but so many places are just going to get you all riled up and then leave it there. And he said, I was so glad to see the panel and what you guys were doing, because what we tried to do is show you what can happen to you. And it is on the increase. We've never had to think about being an enemy of the state. We never have been. We believe in the Constitution. How can we possibly be the enemy of the government and the Constitution when we are calling for the use of the Constitution? And you never have thought of yourself as a rebel, but now you are, just for standing up. You'll hear the story of a guy who lost his children because he would not go along with calling his son, who does not want to be called a girl. It can happen to you, and we are going to give you the do's and don'ts and what you need to do to prepare for these things. It's a introductory, really, on the Constitution and how you should behave. And there is one shocking thing that I think conservatives have never even thought of before is overwhelming advice from the experts. That's tomorrow night only on Blaze TV. Go to blazetv.com/Glenn. Use the promo code STANDUP and save our biggest savings ever, $30 on your 1 year subscription. So it's $70 now for a year. Believe me, you will get more than $70 worth of value out of that with all of the shows that we have and the specials that we have coming up. It is so important now more than ever that we stay in touch with each other and have a direct line of communication. Being a Blaze family member is one way to do that. BlazeTV.com/Glenn. Use the promo code STANDUP.